Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, August 29th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "Summer heat in Midland could have been worse," by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The summer heat in Midland will go down in the record books as one of the hottest ever. Whether referencing average temperatures, the average between the high and low temperatures, the average high temperature, or the number of 100-degree days, it has been hot in Midland. Real hot. But it could have been worse. The National Weather Service is showing that Midland wasn't the only metropolitan area impacted by the heat dome. Far from it. Because no matter the metric, Midland ranks in the bottom half of the 10 metropolitan areas around West Texas and across the state that the Reporter Telegram used for a comparison. This month, the National Weather Service reported Sunday that Midland was still on pace to record the hottest month on record. Whether that happens or not, August 2023 is likely to be among the top five. Across the region and state, Midland's average temperature of 88.7 degrees would have been welcomed. Seven of the top cities showed average temperatures, an average of the high and low temperatures, of 90.7 degrees or warmer. This included Dallas-Fort Worth, 93.7 degrees, Houston, 91.3 degrees, and West Texas cities Abilene, 92.7 degrees, and San Angelo, 90.7 degrees. In terms of the average high temperature, Midland's 101.0-degree mark through Saturday was hot, but again ranked eighth. Four cities showed average high temperatures greater than 105 degrees, including Abilene, 105.7 degrees, Austin, 105.5 degrees, and San Angelo, 105.3 degrees. This summer, there was no city of the 10 warmer than Laredo, which reported an average high temperature of 105.2 degrees and an average temperature of 92 degrees. The next warmest, respectively, were San Angelo at 102.9 degrees, average high temperature, and Dallas at 89.0 degrees, average temperature. Midland came in sixth for high temperature, 100.1 degrees, and ninth for average temperature, 87.0 degrees. Only Lubbock posted a lower average temperature, 83.6 degrees. The 2023 summer average is likely to finish second all time in Midland. 100-degree temperatures. There have been 51 100-degree temperatures in Midland. That ranks tied for the third most in the city's history, according to the National Weather Service. However, the 51 in June, July, and August ranks seventh, and well behind cities like Laredo, 78, and other West Texas cities, San Angelo, 64, and El Paso, 60. The following are metrics from 10 cities across the region and state, using National Weather Service data through Saturday. Average high temperature, August. Abilene, 105.7 degrees. Austin, 105.5. San Angelo, 105.3. Dallas-Fort Worth, 105.3. San Antonio, 103.2. Houston, 101.8. Midland, 101.0, Lubbock, 100.5, El Paso, 100.0, average high temperature this summer. Laredo 105.2, San Angelo 102.9, Austin 100.2, San Antonio 100.2, Laredo 101.5, Midland 100.1, Dallas-Fort Worth 99.7, Abilene 99.1, Houston 98.1, Lubbock 97.0. Average temperature August, Dallas-Fort Worth 93.9, Abilene 92.7, Laredo 92.5, San Antonio 91.4, Houston 91.3, Austin 90.8, San Angelo 90.7, Midland 88.7, El Paso 87.8, and Lubbock 86.8. Average temperature this summer, Laredo 92, Dallas-Fort Worth 89.0, San Antonio 88.9, Houston, 88.5, El Paso, 88.4, and San Angelo, 88.3, Abilene, 87.8, Austin, 87.4, Midland, 87.0, and Lubbock, 83.6. Number of 100-degree high temperatures. Laredo, 78. San Angelo 64, El Paso 60, San Antonio 59, Abilene 54, Austin 52, Midland 51, Dallas-Fort Worth 46, Houston 41, Lubbock 40. Source of this article, the National Weather Service. This article is entitled Chamber Growth to Greatness Events Highlight Local Business Calendar by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. The Midland Chamber of Commerce will hold two events at 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. on September 27th called Growth to Greatness, Exploring Diverse Funding Sources for Small Business Entrepreneurs. On the 27th, there will be two sessions of the same discussion, but the first one will be entirely in Spanish and instructed by Victoria Santiago, the Dean of Continuing Education, Cogda Learning Center and Community Programs at Midland College. The second session will be in English and instructed by Corey Chisholm, Director of the Cogda Learning Center and Community Programs at Midland College. The program, which is scheduled to take place at the Midland Chamber of Commerce Boardroom, is made to explore a variety of lending options for small entrepreneurs. Small business owners can learn about a range of funding sources from traditional bank loans to modern online platforms, according to the Midland Chamber website. Business Calendar. August 29th, First Bank and Trust Mixer, 5 to 7 p.m., 1111 West Wall Street. September 27th, Growth to Greatness, Exploring Diverse Funding Sources for Small Business Entrepreneurs in Spanish, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., Midland Chamber of Commerce Boardroom. September 27th, Growth to Greatness, Exploring Diverse Funding Sources for Small Business Entrepreneurs, 11 a.m. to noon, Midland Chamber of Commerce Boardroom. October 11th to 12th, 2023 WTX Women, Professional Women's Symposium. October 26th, Power of the Purse Fundraiser, 6 to 8:30 p.m., Bush Convention Center. This article is entitled County Leaders Discuss Next Library Advisory Board by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Midland County Commissioners discussed the Midlanders they want to see serve on the Library Advisory Board. On Midland County's website, it states that the board's responsibility is, quote, to assist the head librarian and the Midland County Commissioners Court to maximize the impact and effectiveness of the Midland County Public Library by providing ideas, innovations, and recommendations from a user perspective, and to help serve as a conduit for public awareness and feedback on the state of the library and its service and relevance, unquote. In early March, Midland County Commissioners began to call attention to Midland County Public Library's reconsideration procedures. The reconsideration policy allows patrons to notify the library about a title in a county library that they deem inappropriate for youths. The policy states that the reconsidered books are initially reread by the library director. The library director will prepare a written response to the patron within 10 business days. If the patron is dissatisfied with the library's response to their request, they can bring the issue to the Library Advisory Board. On Monday, Midland County Commissioners discussed who they want to see serve on the Library Advisory Board. The board has three existing members, John Trishitti III, Bunny Tribble, and Allison Brown. Each commissioner, except for Precinct 3 Commissioner Luis Sanchez, gave at least one recommendation. County Judge Terry Johnson recommended True Life Christian Fellowship Church pastor Roy Smith. Precinct 4 Commissioner Diane Anderson recommended Michelle Allen, who works in MISD elementary schools, and Alfred T. Garza, Jr. Precinct 2 Commissioner Jeff Somers recommended Kristen Hughes. Precinct 1 Commissioner Scott Ramsey brought up Alethea Blisach, who served on the advisory board from 2010 to 2013. The previous members of the advisory board, except for Trishitti, Tribble, and Brown, officially resigned. The process of forming the Library Advisory Board is ongoing. The names brought up in Commissioner's Court on Monday were early recommendations for the committee. This article is entitled, Electrical Issue Likely Starts Fire in West Midland. Structure Fire Displaced 3 Residents, by Stuart Doreen, Editor. 3 people were displaced after a structure fire in the 3600 block of Bauman Avenue on Friday afternoon, according to Midland Fire Department. MFD reported that at 5:20 p.m., crews with the MFD responded to a structure fire, which started in the southeast bedroom of the house and is believed to be due to an electrical issue. There were no injuries reported, and the American Red Cross is assisting 3 displaced residents. This article is entitled, Fire Southeast of Midland Displaces 5 Sunday Night. The fire began in the home before spreading to 2 nearby sheds, said Midland Fire Department. By Stuart Doreen, Editor. The Midland Fire Department responded to a fire around 8:40 p.m. Sunday, southeast of Midland. The structure fire took place near East County Road 140 and Ranch Road 1213 in Midland County. The fire began in the home and spread to 2 sheds near the home, the fire department stated. There were no injuries reported. The American Red Cross is assisting 5 displaced residents, according to the city. The cause of the fire is under investigation. This article is entitled, Leech, Education, Healthcare, Our Priorities. ConocoPhillips advisor to the CEO, PSP's investments are good for business. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Editor's note, the Reporter-Telegram will bring you the priorities for Midland from different non-elected community leaders. If you ask Tim Leach what the community's priorities are, he will tell you education and health care. Leach's declaration isn't just from decades of living in Midland. It comes from being a leader at the former Concho Resources and current ConocoPhillips, being a participant in the Permian Strategic Partnership, and a board member of the Scarborough Foundation. Those are big, broad subjects, Leach said, but we're leaning into those pretty heavily. To get people to move out here, in a generally tough place to live and work, we have to have top education to compete with the best education systems in our state. So we need to aim pretty high. And then on healthcare, you've heard the plans of trying to build a healthcare system where people don't have to leave this area to go get basic healthcare. Also, healthcare that supports the kind of industry we have, with better EMS and healthcare that reaches out to the smaller communities. Because nationally, healthcare is a tough business, and it's failing nationally. In smaller communities like Pecos, Ira Ann, and others, where it's difficult to find specialized healthcare options, we had to come up with a system that can serve the whole Permian Basin. What Midland needs has been talked about. But as Midlanders find themselves in budget season, and the focal point of reports like the one in Bloomberg that criticized Midland's ability to reinvest in itself, priorities come to the forefront. Leach is quick to remind people of the amount of wealth created for the entire world through the discovery of oil and gas resources. And that's really only happened in the last 10 years or so to a great extent. He said that discovery has put a strain on the city and region's infrastructure and tested a community that is, quote, a little hesitant to invest into a future that looks like a boomtime future, because we've seen that before, unquote. I think the oil and gas cycle that we are in may be a long oil and gas cycle, Leach said. We're changing the world economy through what we're doing out here, and we were telling our employees that 10 years ago, what you're doing today is changing the world. And it wasn't just hyperbole. And I think it turned out to be even more true than we knew that it was going to be. Leach said the Permian Strategic Partnership will allow industry leaders to play a greater role moving forward, spending tens of millions of dollars and using its considerable influence to help bring even more resources to Midland and the Permian Basin. He mentioned the plan by the PSP to bring charter schools to Midland to help lay that education infrastructure and make Midland more marketable for families that might be reluctant to otherwise put down roots in West Texas. At least two out-of-district charter schools are expected to open in Midland in the next 3 years. The longer we take to reinvest in education, the more expensive it's going to be, Leach said. I think charter schools will be a significant part of the answer to what does good education look like in the future. I think the businesses have decided that you can't run a business here if you don't have the basic infrastructure, Leach said. The Permian Strategic Partnership member companies employ a large percentage of the workforce in the Permian Basin, and our goal is to make the Permian Basin better for all its residents. In addition to being good corporate citizens, the PSP's investments are good for business. This article is entitled, "Nuclear Waste Disposal License Near Andrews Vacated," by Mella McEwen, staff writer. A 2-year fight over plans to store high-level nuclear waste at an interim storage facility near Andrews is nearing its end. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission issued a license for interim storage partners to receive, possess, transfer, and store up to 5,000 metric tons of spent fuel and 231.3 metric tons of greater than Class C low-level radioactive waste for 40 years. On property at the existing Waste Control Specialists low-level radioactive waste disposal site. The State of Texas, Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, Fasken Oil and Ranch, and Permian Basin land and royalty owners sued to overturn the license. And this past Friday, the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed, vacating the license. In its ruling, the court agreed with the petitioners that the NRC lacked authority to issue the license under the Atomic Energy Act. Monica Perales, attorney for Fasken Oil and Ranch, told the Reporter Telegram by telephone that she had listened in on the arguments a year ago and was growing concerned about the length of time for a decision. But in reading the order, she said they really studied the issue. They really got it. She dates the effort back to around 2014, when then Midland County Commissioner Randy Prude told Fasken about the NRC's plans to issue the license. Since then, we have been fighting to stop that federal agency from turning our region into the nation's nuclear dump. Fasken took the lead and formed a coalition back in 2018 and began studying up on the subject and strategizing. We took a multi-pronged approach that included raising awareness locally and across the state, passing resolutions and bills of opposition, and filing petitions to stop this rogue agency from taking advantage of our community and our state, she wrote in a follow-up email that included the court's ruling. She said Andrews residents were incredibly supportive and worked hard to see the resolutions against the facility passed. But, she wrote, a state bill took some effort, and she credited State Representative Tom Craddock with helping navigate the Texas Capitol. At the 11th hour, just before the license was issued, Governor Abbott took the bull by the horns and said a clean bill would be filed without any distracting language, she wrote. State Representative Brooks Landgraf of Odessa, whose district at the time included Andrews, filed the bill banning disposal of high-level nuclear waste in Texas, and it was signed into law in September 2021. Now we are lobbying at the federal level to ensure that the waste companies and the NRC don't try to change the laws or budgets in their favor, Perales wrote. The next step could be an appeal by the NRC, she said, and if that happens, we will see them before the U.S. Supreme Court. This column is called Small Bites. It is entitled, Osiller Cafe Represents Owner's Second Chance at Life, by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. Embedded deep in the roots of Osiller Cafe lies Christy Siller's second chance at life. 2 years ago, during the height of the pandemic, Christy contracted COVID-19. During her 42-day hospital stay, Christy spent 18 of them intubated. She added that the day she woke from her comatose state, she, for all intents and purposes, died. God, however, had other plans. Life's too short to not do things you want to do, and God gave me that second chance, Christy said. With 15 years' experience as a server and plenty of successful rounds cooking in large quantities for her church and family, the Midlander decided to follow her restaurant dreams. On May 2nd, Christy and her husband Zacharias Olivas, along with the help of her parents, opened Osiller Cafe. Representing both the Olivas and Siller name, the cafe serves traditional American and Mexican cuisine. I have a degree in applied science, but I just like to cook, Christy said. I already knew how to take care and deal with people, so I went ahead and risked it. Although the 523 East Illinois Avenue building only contains 4 months of Osciller occupancy, the history of the brick building tells a different story. Me and my husband have been coming here since we were 16, whenever it was El Monterey. I ordered the chicken quesadillas, and he ordered a bean and cheese burrito, Christy recalled. After it was El Monterey, it was Casa del Sol, and we actually ended up working as servers when it was Casa del Sol. That was my first serving job, and his second. Since then, the location has held a special place in both Christie's and Zacharias's heart. So, when the location's landlord, who knew Christy and her restaurateur plans, began searching for a new tenant, all the pieces fell into place. Using generational recipes and her own experimentations, Christy, Zacharias, and their daughter Nevaeh can be found from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and 5 to 8 p.m. Monday, Friday, and Saturday. Osciller Cafe offers dine-in, takeout, and catering. To place an order or schedule a catering event, call 432-994-2607. 523 East Illinois Avenue. Hot Bites. With two nations' worth of dishes, the fresh, made-to-order menu at Osciller can surely please anyone who walks through the cafe's big wooden doors. Some appetizer options include nachos, queso, fried okra, fried mushrooms, and more. Both breakfast and lunch burritos can be purchased, filled with concoctions such as eggs, potatoes, ham and cheese, or fajita meat, veggies, and beans. Entree items include a shredded brisket plate, chalupas, Christie's chicken verde, enchiladas, fajitas, hamburger steak, quesadillas, a chicken breast, a 14-ounce ribeye, taquitos, tilapia, squash and chicken, shrimp, and ground beef con papas. On Friday and Saturday only, guests can enjoy a hot bowl of menudo. Burger creations. Mexican burger, BLT, cheeseburger, grilled chicken sandwich, brisket sandwich, and more. Side options include French fries, mac and cheese, macaroni salad, mashed potatoes, corn, Mexican rice, pinto beans, potato salad, sopita, and steamed broccoli. The restaurant also offers salads, a kids' menu, and five desserts: cherry cobbler, peach cobbler, ice cream, strawberry cake, and pink salad. Overall vibes. The East Illinois building has been home to many Midland staples, but Osciller Cafe takes the cake. A homegrown feel reverberates between the painted walls, while Christie's humble demeanor floods the kitchen. Out front, everyone's treated like family, with courtesy and respect. A trip to Osciller means gaining new friends, all while enjoying delicious homemade dishes. A picturesque example of what it means to live life to the fullest. Christy and the rest of the Osciller Cafe team should be at the top of your list. This article is entitled, Woman Hit on August 18th Succumbs to Injuries. The 23-year-old was struck while crossing the street. By Stuart Doreen, editor. A 23-year-old Midland woman died Saturday, succumbing to injuries sustained in an August 18th pedestrian accident, according to Midland police. MPD reported Monday that Elizabeth G. Ramirez passed away in Lubbock Hospital at 12:30 a.m. Saturday. MPD had reported that on August 18th, at approximately 12:15 a.m., officers with the Midland Police Department responded to a pedestrian accident in the 3500 block of West Wadley Avenue. According to reports, a female pedestrian, identified as Elizabeth G. Ramirez, was struck in the center eastbound lane while crossing between Godfrey Street and Tarleton Street. She was transported by Midland Fire EMS with life-threatening injuries. Ramirez was then transported to Lubbock. Next of kin has been notified. The fatality is the 29th reported inside Midland County this year, according to Reporter Telegram records.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, August 29th. OC signs more Ford asset students. Odessa College on Monday held the second annual Ford Asset Signing Day at the Sewell Auto Tech facility. 17 students turned out for the occasion. In the Ford Automotive Student Service Educational Training Asset Program at Odessa College, students rotate between classroom studies and hands-on experience at Ford or Lincoln dealerships over 2 years, graduating with an associate degree and dealer expertise. They will earn full certification with Ford, including BEV, Battery Electric Vehicle Certification. Mike Merrill, General Manager of Sewell, said he is super excited about the new cohorts of students. He thanked the families and parents who were on hand Monday. This is an amazing opportunity for you to be able to fast track into senior master tech position, Merrill said. After being at 2425 East 8th Street for decades, Merrill said the Sewell family of companies moved to 7260 East Highway 191 in 2018. Merrill said President Colin Sewell had the vision to make this into what it is today. Between him and Odessa College, this was born out of that. We've had 30 graduating members so far, so we have 30 young men and women that are on the line right now becoming our senior master techs at all kinds of dealerships. We have another 20 who will graduate in May and then the 17 from Monday, Merrill said. The Sewell dealership is completely involved with this, along with the leaders that you see represented. We're just blessed to have all of you, and thank you for trusting Odessa College. It's a great organization, and it's got a phenomenal track record in senior master tech certifications. Sean Sessa, automotive and diesel instructor at the Ford Asset Program, said the Ford Asset Program is not just a dealership between OC and Ford Motor Company, but every manufacturer specific Ford Lincoln dealership in the area. That includes El Paso to Stanton and Big Spring. We are committed to bringing new young men and young women and some of our other seasoned professionals that wish to switch their programs into a manufacturer specific job. When we talk manufacturer specific cars and trucks, they're nuts and bolts. There are all kinds of similar, but there's a special pride that comes from working on a manufacturer brand and knowing everything you can about a specific vehicle and all the new model and technology that comes out, Sessa said. He added that a 1965 Mustang and a 2023 vehicle are completely different beasts. We've got electric vehicles now. We need to be prepared, and we need to be raising in-house our technicians to be able to work and be able to adapt to the coming environments. The partnership was formed to train these specific technicians in that format, Sessa said. He added that coming out with this program, students will receive their Ford Master Certification. This is after a 2-year commitment with this program as well as an associate degree. That's an amazing accomplishment in the automotive world. not simply because of the time spent. If you were to not go through the asset program that would take 5 years to accomplish, Sessa said, the students sign a promissory note, a symbol to their commitment to investing their time, talent, and energy into the Ford Asset Program. In this document, it talks about the investment that you're going to be making into the program that you are committing to. It also talks about the investment that OC is putting into your outcomes for a brand new career, a brand new life, and into your future. But not only those two investments, there is also a major investment that industry partners, Dean of the School of Business and Industry, Gene White, said. Christian Acevedo has been interested in auto mechanics since he was 14. He is now 20. Acevedo said he's seen all the changes between older and newer vehicles, but he personally prefers the older models because they are easier to work on and look better, in his opinion. I grew up with older Ford vehicles, Acevedo said. Gabino Almagar, 22, said he has been interested in working on cars and got a job as a porter at Rogers Ford. They also told him about the asset program. It was just always liking cars and finding ways to get it to probably the best part about this program, Almagar said. He's excited about his future and feels a little more secure. As long as I work hard at this, it will work out, Almagar said. Current students enrolled at the time of publication, Christian L. Acevedo, Rogers Ford, Gabino F. Almagar, Rogers Ford, Jacob A. Beeman, Sewell Ford, Christian F. Coltharp, Casa Ford El Paso, Jose L. Foriano, Rogers Ford, Francisco M. Gonzalez, to be determined, Francisco S. Grajade, Sewell Ford, Antonio Anthony J. Hernandez, to be determined, Estrella V. Jaquez, to be determined, Adrian J. Lara, Sewell Ford, Eric Ortiz, Rogers Ford, Adam M. Ruhl, Rogers Ford, Miguel O. Soto, to be determined, Carlos M. Trejo, Sewell Ford, Sebastian Villegas, to be determined, London B. Watson, to be determined, Kobe N. Zuniga, Sewell Ford. More move forward for generous Excel High School scholarships. The Ector County Library is now sponsoring additional Gale Excel Adult High School scholarships and 9 more seats in the highly acclaimed and popular program, totaling 14 students. They are virtual, self-paced, and for those over 21, a press release detailed. It is also a second chance in many cases for these folks to graduate with a nationally accredited diploma with up to 2 years to complete the curriculum. This is not a GED. Each are priced at $1,100. However, with the new Excel program already at full capacity and due to the very high interest in it, the library will continue to be very selective to admitting candidates as they gain access to additional scholarships and reopen applications in the future, the release said. The Ector County Library was first established in 1938. It is free and open to the public, serves all ages, has an extensive collection of 200,000 print books, over 20,000 e-books, nearly 100 databases, and serves a population of over 160,000 people locally and regionally. State finalists named for 2023 Superintendent of the Year Award. The Texas Association of School Boards, TASB, announced Monday that five public school superintendents have been selected as state finalists for the annual Superintendent of the Year SOTY Award, a program that has been recognizing exemplary school leaders since 1984. Our goal with the Superintendent of the Year program is to honor the outstanding talent we have leading our Texas public schools, said TASB Executive Director Dan Troxell in a press release. Serving as a superintendent is one of the toughest yet most rewarding jobs in the world, and we're thrilled to be able to celebrate these accomplishments and committed leaders who do so much for our students. The five finalists were selected by a TASB committee made up of school board members who interviewed 19 regional nominees put forward by Education Service Center, ESC, across the state. The candidates were evaluated on their work in improving student outcomes, developing a strong team of eight relationship, advocacy, and their ongoing commitment to innovation and leadership. Kerrville ISD trustee Rolinda Schmidt, who chaired the TASB selection committee, thanked all of the superintendents who participated in the interview process, which took place August 25th, 26th in Austin. On behalf of the committee, we are grateful to all the boards that submitted nominations on behalf of their superintendents, and all of the work by the ESCs and the regional selection committees to put forward such outstanding regional finalists, Schmid said in the release. It was extremely difficult to come up with a list of five finalists among such exceptional leaders, and we are grateful to all of them for everything they do to advance educational excellence among Texas public school children. The five state finalists are Martha Salazar, Zamora, Tomball ISD Region 4, Wade Stanford, Westwood ISD Region 7, Jim F. Chadwell, Eagle Mountain, Saginaw ISD Region 11, Sherry Blankenship, Hereford ISD Region 16, Joe Lopez, Kermit ISD Region 18. Those named as state finalists will advance to the next stage of the Superintendent of the Year competition, which will take place at the Texas Association of School Administrators, TASB Convention, being held September 29th through August 1st in Dallas. The winner will be announced Friday, September 29th, and will receive an award underwritten by program sponsor Balfour. Man accused of assaulting sister and mom. An Odessa man was arrested on multiple felony charges Thursday after multiple people told authorities he swung a tire iron at his mother and shoved his pregnant sister to the ground. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received a disturbance call around 7 p.m. Thursday from the 4300 block of Locust Avenue, and when officers arrived, they saw multiple people in the street. Witnesses and family members told officers Jeremy Pinedo, 29, and his 32-year-old pregnant sister began arguing at the front door after she told him to leave, the report stated. After he allegedly shoved her to the ground, witnesses said he armed himself with a tire iron and swung it at his 51-year-old mom while she was holding an 8-month-old boy. Pinedo's sister said her brother knew she was pregnant before the fight turned physical, the report stated. Officers saw redness and scratches on her face. Pinedo told police he was at the residence to collect money he was owed, but he denied shoving his sister, the report stated. He admitted to arming himself with a tire iron, but said it was to protect himself from his mother's boyfriend. Pinedo was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, assault of a pregnant person, and endangering a child. The aggravated assault charge is the most serious and is punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison. He remains at the Ector County Jail Monday on surety bonds totaling $3,400. Laredo man killed in Midland County crash. A 24-year-old Laredo man was killed Saturday night in a two-vehicle crash in Midland County, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. Rogelio Antonio Martinez was driving a Volkswagen Jetta west on County Road 54 when he disregarded a stop sign at FM 1788 and struck a Chevrolet 3500 shortly after 10 p.m. Martinez wasn't wearing a seatbelt, was pronounced dead at the scene, according to DPS. The driver of the Chevy, a 48-year-old man from Odessa, was wearing a seatbelt and taken to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he was treated and released. Odessa man being held on murder charge. A 23-year-old Odessa man, accused of shooting another man multiple times last week, was arrested Saturday on a murder charge and on two outstanding armed robbery warrants out of Collin County. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received a 911 call about shots being fired in the 700 block of Snyder Street around 1:30 p.m. Wednesday, and officers quickly learned two gunshot victims had been driven to Odessa Regional Medical Center by privately owned vehicles. The person who drove, Jason Crowder, 28, to the hospital told authorities he drove Crowder to Snyder Street and Crowder was shot after calling a man he didn't know a rat. According to the report, he drove Crowder to ORMC after the shooter ran away. Kimbrick White, who was shot once in the right armpit, told police he was shot at, but he didn't return fire, the report stated. However, the OPD report indicates officers found a surveillance video showing the two men arguing, White shooting at Crowder and Crowder returning fire from behind a nearby vehicle as White continues to shoot at him. The video shows Crowder falling into the street and White shooting at him from closer range, the report stated. It also shows the moment White is hit by one of Crowder's bullets and then getting into a Dodge Charger and departing. Moments later, the video shows Crowder being helped into a Kia van and leaving. Officers found a gun in the Kia and an empty gun in the front yard of a home on Snyder, the report stated. The gun was empty of rounds and the slide was locked back, consistent with all of the rounds being fired, the report stated. Ector County jail records indicate White was arrested on one count each of murder and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and the Collins County warrants. He's being held without bail on the murder counts and surety bonds totaling $125,000 in the other cases. Odessa Arts, Downtown Odessa, announced September 1st Friday attractions. Odessa Arts and Downtown Odessa Incorporated continued the excitement from August launch of First Fridays with an expanded lineup in September. The community response to First Friday was amazing. We are so excited to continue bringing entertainment and activities to Downtown Odessa while promoting our downtown businesses, said Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm in a press release. Having so many new offerings for community members to experience has helped grow downtown, agreed Odessa. Downtown Odessa Incorporated Executive Director Elizabeth Prieto in the release. First Friday will run from 6 to 9 p.m. Friday, September 1st, with events at the following locations in downtown Odessa. Homemade wines, floral design class with black tulip, Odessa College Downtown Music New Classics, Copper Key Gifts Music Justin Wilson, Rooster's Diner Partner Painting, Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, Booze and Vinyl Sold Out. Torchy's Tacos, caricature artist Daniel Tarango, Patrick's Clay's Icon Tavern, Evil Ink Tattoo, Copper Rose Ballroom, Skalicky, Ballet Class, Copper Rose Basement, Retro Night Game Night, Retro Hall Game Night, McJack's General Store, Baby Beast Permanent Jewelry, Izzy Fine Jewelry, Live Jewelry Making, Sunflower RX, Sidewalk Chalk Art, Starbucks on 5th, Poetry on Demand. Additional information and registration links can be found at firstfridayodtx.com. Miss Casey's Wonderland celebrating 39 years. Miss Casey's Wonderland has been celebrating and decorating for over 39 years and has scheduled a grand holiday reveal from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. September 8th at their location at 1012 Andrews Highway in Midland. Owned and operated by sisters and co-owners Kathy Harrison and Becky McCraney, they believe being in business with your sister and best friend is a partnership and plan that God had for their lives. He gave them both an entrepreneurial spirit and a passion for creating and decorating, a press release said. Their family and parents have given them a strong faith and value system that is aligned with their business practices. Becky and Kathy have been creating and selling since they were very young, with parents who encouraged, supported, and facilitated their endeavors. The release continues. They decoupaged, painted, sewed, sanded everything from wood to t-shirts, and even peddled their handmade burlap flowers door to door. It was only natural that their ragtag collections, they called Miss Casey's, early on would become Miss Casey's Wonderland, showcasing holiday and home decor in a 16,000 square foot building in Midland. They have been bringing the Permian Basin and beyond the best in seasonal decor for 39 years. A strong family foundation is one of the keys to their success, the release said. The store is named after their grandmother, who came from a strong line of women and who inspired them with their own brand of holiday magic and family traditions. Their parents were a tremendous help to them, their dad making many of their display furniture and mom being chief babysitter to their children and grandchildren. Family businesses require a lot of family interaction and support. Family business partners must have talents and abilities that complement each other with defined roles that capitalize on strengths and minimize weaknesses. Besides their shared passion for creating and decorating and their entrepreneurial spirit, Becky and Kathy each have their separate roles in their business. Becky takes the lead in the website, advertising, marketing, all aspects of social media, event planning and coordination, along with community partnerships. Kathy handles all the payables with my accountant husband and a great office manager. Kathy also plans the store layout, merchandising and product display, designing vignettes of themes, organizing the warehouse for optimal selection for tree and back stock storage. They attribute much of their success to amazing team members over their many years in business. Their buying skills are a magical mix of talents that have served them well over their many years in business. Attending markets in Dallas and Atlanta, they work well together, picking up the thousands of sources. The beautiful seasonal and home decor product that is the signature look offered and expected at Miss Casey's Wonderland. Their website, MissCaseysWonderland.com, is now shipping their seasonal goods all over the world. Miss Casey's is located at 1012 Andrews Highway in Midland, behind Westlake, Ace Hardware, and United, and open all year round. They offer seasonal holiday decor from Valentine's, Easter, 4th of July, Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. They believe there is always a reason to celebrate and decorate. School Choice Select Committee reports net positive views. With school choice likely looming for an upcoming special session, Representative Brooks Landgraf has encountered mixed views on school choice. His colleagues are having much the same experience. I'm having conversations all across West Texas about this issue. I have a certain number of constituents who want full-on vouchers. I have another set of constituents who want nothing having to do with vouchers. Then a lot of folks in between who want to have something that strikes the right balance. I'm just trying to have as many conversations with constituents as possible, but I am starting to see kind of this preference for some kind of hybrid emerge, Landgraf said in a phone interview. He said his legislative colleagues are encountering some variation of that. I think this report will reflect that we do need to expand the options that are available to students and parents, but with an understanding that that's going to look different in every community in the state too. So there is a challenge in trying to account for all these differences, Landgraf said. He added that he thinks the Select Committee on Educational Opportunity and Enrichment is certainly addressing the topics that are front and center for lawmakers and Texans. There might not be 100% agreement on the findings and recommendations, but I would say there's consensus that these are the issues that need to be addressed in a future special session, Landgraf said. He added that only Governor Greg Abbott can call a special session, and he hasn't done so yet. A lot of legislators are expecting Abbott will call one at some point this fall, and it certainly could include funding for public schools. That's definitely a possibility. I think there will be at least one special legislative session that's dedicated to education policy, including increasing school funding, Landgraf said. He added that education savings accounts would not necessarily mean the death of public schools. I think that what was recommended in that committee report is something that can balance the needs of public schools across the state, but also make sure that students who are desperate for a lifeline are also given the educational opportunities that they need, Landgraf said. In rural communities, there isn't a lot of choice of where to attend school, but Landgraf said in the case of Wink Loving ISD, it's an award-winning district. They're an exemplary school district. They've won all of these blue ribbon awards. They are relatively small enrollment, one of the smallest school districts in the state, but children literally come from miles around to attend those schools, Wink said. In Wink, Landgraf said, you could fill the private school right across the street from the high school and nobody would go to it because you could get a better education at Wink because it's so outstanding. That's a phenomenon that you would find in every area of the state. That's kind of a special set of circumstances. So let's not do anything to disrupt the award-winning formula that Wink has, he added. But in places like Houston ISD, which has been consistently failing campuses, Landgraf said something has to be done. We don't want to lose an entire generation of students, in particular parts of Houston, who just don't have any educational opportunities. So trying to provide the best opportunities for every student in Texas is going to be different for every community, Landgraf said. His goal is for every policy decision, every vote that he takes, is to ask himself what he can do to improve the educational outcomes for Texas students. For him, that is the central question because in the realm of education policy, they are there to serve students and give them the best education possible so they can have as many opportunities for a successful life as possible. Asked if choice works better in larger cities than smaller ones, Landgraf said it does. That's the same for retail. Using that comparison with Wink and Houston, Wink has a great Allsups, but they don't have a Neiman Marcus. But Allsups is meeting the needs of the community very well, just like the Wink-Loving Independent School District is meeting the educational needs. That just goes to show that we can't have a one-size-fits-all policy when it comes to this because there's a big difference between Wink and Houston, Landgraf said. To his credit, Landgraf said the governor was leaving the details of the school choice and education savings accounts to the legislature. I think he has an idea that he wants to see, but he seems to be letting the process play out on this particular issue, Landgraf said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.